Welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. So for this episode, we decided to tackle kind of a challenge, a problem that comes up every so often when you work at a digital marketing agency. And if you're trying to handle your own marketing as a law firm, or if you're working with a marketing partner, I'm sure it's come up for you too. And that problem is, you know, what do you do when you've spent time reading and researching the best practices for marketing? You feel like you're following, you know, what all the experts are telling you to do, and yet it's just not working the way you want. You know, you're not getting the results you want. That's a problem we've had to deal with for clients at LaFleur. You know, it's just a part of marketing sometimes that things don't work out the way you plan and you have to readjust. So what I thought we would do is kind of draw from our experience and expertise, you know, going through that process with clients and, you know, try to come up with sort of a, what I call a 12-point inspection type plan that you can apply to your marketing plan and, you know, kind of use it for troubleshooting purposes. So we've got Chip and Dave from the LaFleur team joining us for that, and we're going to walk you through what that process looks like and see if we can't give you some tools that can help you troubleshoot your digital marketing campaigns. First, before we get started, just a quick reminder, if you're not already familiar with LaFleur, we're a full-service legal marketing partner that works with law firms across the country to deliver data-driven solutions that grow their business. To learn more about us, just visit our website. We're at lafleur.marketing. That's LaFleur.marketing. So our discussion for this episode went pretty long, and so we're going to break down this episode into two different parts for you to make it a little more digestible. And even then, the episodes are a bit longer than normal. So without any further delay, let's head over to the podcast studio and join Chip and Dave for part one of how to troubleshoot your digital marketing campaigns on Legal Marketing Radio. Okay, so we're back in the podcast studio this week, and we have a pair of guests who will be very familiar to you guys if you've followed this podcast. It might be our most classic guest setup that we have. We've got Chip and Dave back in the podcast. I feel like I can do the Rescue Ranger, Chip and Dave. So if you're not familiar before, Chip LaFleur is the president and founder of LaFleur Marketing. How are you doing today, Chip?
Pretty good, Stephen. Thanks. How about you?
I'm great. And Dave Vandewa is our managing editor. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm the managing editor. We change titles sometimes. I forget. Dave is the content director here at LaFleur.
Yeah. Hi, Stephen. How are you doing?
Good. Great to have you guys on. So what I wanted to talk about this week, I had an idea for a podcast. And this kind of came out of, I think, a lot of experiences that we've had just doing marketing for our clients and constantly trying to adjust things. And having calls with clients, explaining to them, you know, what we're doing and what we're adjusting over time. So I wanted to kind of talk about, you know, an episode about how to troubleshoot your digital marketing. You know, what do you do when you've been reading on the best practices? You know, you feel like you know what you're supposed to do. You're doing those things, or at least you feel like you are, and you're just not getting the results you want, right? And this is a problem we have to solve sometimes because, you know, clients, you know, we start them out, we tell them what they need to do, and you know, maybe their expectations on traffic and cases, you know, aren't being met after a while. So we have to talk with them. You know, we have to assess the situation and figure out how we're going to address it going forward. So obviously, there's a lot of things that go into this and a lot of considerations. And, you know, one of them that we can talk about later is, number one, are your expectations realistic? You know, that's one reason they might not be being met. But let's go forward from the beginning and assume that they are, right? So I feel like, and you guys can chime in at any time and correct me if you have, you know, think I'm wrong on this or you have something else to add. But I think that this type of problem basically falls into one of three different classifications, right? I would say the first classification is you're just not getting web traffic. You're not getting the visits you want or the email click-throughs or whatever you're looking for. You're getting crickets, right? I feel like the second sort of stage or classification of the problem is you are getting web traffic, but you're not getting leads. You know, people aren't filling out forms. You're not getting calls. You're not getting chats. And then I feel like the third possible phase of the problem is you are getting leads, but you're still not getting clients and cases, right? And I feel like we've had different clients struggle with all three of these kind of issues at various points. So, you know, let's go forward and let's assume that the listener, you know, has a lawyer, it's a lawyer, they have their own practice or they're working with, you know, a marketing agency, whatever. Let's say they have in place most of what we would call, in some form, marketing best practices. So they have a website that's, you know, active and it's reasonably not bad. It doesn't look like an old, you know, Angel Fire page or something like that. And they have an active blog. They've got a content strategy in place. They've got the major social media profiles. Say they've got Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And they've got at least semi-consistent posting. They've got a PPC campaign going. You know, maybe it's not getting the numbers that they want, but they've got something in place. And they've got some email automation campaigns where they've got different audiences they're targeting. So let's see what we can do to kind of lay out, you know, like imagine for your car, you know, you get a 12-point inspection plan. I was thinking maybe we can lay out a similar kind of plan for someone to go through their digital marketing efforts and find out where the problem is and then see what they can do to adjust it. So let's start out with the issue of, you know, the site just isn't getting the web traffic that, you know, people want to see. Or, you know, almost a similar issue is that they are getting traffic, but they have a really high bounce rate, right? Which is almost as good as no traffic, basically. So let's use that as a jumping off point and talk about, you know, what you can do to assess why your site isn't getting traffic and how you can try to raise visibility for it. Chip, you want to get us started? Do you have any thoughts on, I'm sure you've, you know, been through this a lot with clients as we have, so.
Oh, for sure. So I think there's some basic technical things to look at first, of course. You know, analytics, is it set up right? Is it tracking appropriately? You know, a good way to do that is to just go on to Google Analytics, go on a site at the same time, and see if there's any current visitors to the site. It's going to tell you if it's tracking you, you know, while you're on there. And then depending on, well, it's really platform independent, but you check on your robots, .txt file. If you're in WordPress, for example, it's just a checkbox in the settings.
Can you explain to listeners what the robots.txt is,
yep,
in case they don't know?
Yep, I can do that. So the robots.txt is kind of like a polite request to various different search engines to say, hey, you know, we'd really rather have you not crawl us right now. So you'll use that when you're setting up and building a site, you know, where that site is live on the internet, but there's no good way to get to it. Maybe it's in a subdomain or something like that because it's just in development. But you also want, you know, the owner to be able to look at it, or you want, you know, different people, different stakeholders to be able to review the site. So you put that out there, but you'll put in the robots file, you know, basically to say, hey, please don't crawl our site. You can't stop Google from crawling the site without like password or something like that. But it's surprising, you know, how many times we've seen that happen. You know, people push the site out. They come to us, we look through, and, well, your site's not getting crawled because you're asking them to not crawl your site. So that's kind of low-hanging fruit. You know, it's one of the first things that we look for. And then beyond that, there are a handful of other technical things, I think, that we can take a look at.
Let's talk about real quick, too, since you mentioned to make sure your analytics are set up correctly. One question that came to mind for me is, you know, as you're setting up a site and checking the analytics, maybe this is a good question to get out of the way early. You know, how often and how early should you be looking for returns, you know, on analytics wise? Like, you know, if you're on a diet, you know, some people say you shouldn't weigh yourself every day because you get caught up in the minutia, you know, and also you can't, you know, if you're expecting a big drop in the scale in week one, you know, you're going to be disappointed and you might get off track. So when do you start looking for returns, you know, on the analytics side of things? And then how often do you kind of check it for meaningful results?
I think that's actually kind of a nuanced question because it depends on the various elements that are being put into place for the campaign. So if it's a campaign that we're looking for organic traffic only, then, you know, get it set up, make sure it's working, and then you really need to give it a couple months. I mean, not that you don't look at analytics throughout that period, you do, probably at least on a biweekly basis every other week. But you shouldn't expect to start really seeing traffic for the first couple of months, because what are you relying on? You're relying on Google to crawl your site and find it relevant. Google's going to find it more relevant if there's more links pointing back to it. And from the outset, that's not going to be the case. But then if you go kind of to the next stage and you say, well, it's a site that we're looking for organic traffic, but we also have a good social media strategy in place, and we're actively promoting this content, you know, then that's something that you want to look at. You know, if you're the marketing agency that's working on that and that's your job, or if you're marketing director, then you probably want to look at that a couple times a week. What tactics are driving traffic? You know, what's the traffic doing when it gets there? And then two, if it's a project where you're developing content, you have a social media strategy and you're using paid tactics, then you really, especially at the beginning, you need to look at that every day, because you need to determine which of those tactics are driving good traffic back to the site. And we want to define good traffic as, you know, traffic that has a low bounce rate, stays on the site for a little while. At the initial stage, that's what we want to see, is we want to see good statistics around those things. The lower the bounce rate, the better. We have a client right now that I was just taking a look at, and their content area has a bounce rate that's lower than 40%.
Wow, that's pretty remarkable for a law firm website, and really for any website, but, you know, law firms tend to have a little bit high on the bounce rate. So, yeah, 40% is pretty remarkable.
Full disclosure, this is actually a healthcare site.
Now, people are shooting for 50 bounce rate, you know, like, oh, that's great.
People feel great about a 50%
right.
bounce rate.
Right. In any industry, 40% is pretty spectacular. Yeah. So
it's pretty good. So, but we have a broad strategy in that instance, right? So we're looking at what's driving traffic to the site, you know, is it relevant, and things like that. So we look at those, we look for those indicators first, and then longer term, we're going to look for indicators around conversions and things like that.
I think you brought something up really important, Stephen, that people tend, there's like a recency bias in the data, you know? So if you look at it, the default view in analytics is like the 1 week or something. It's a pretty small window. And so people see that and they go, oh no, there's a lot less traffic on my website this week. And the website traffic fluctuates drastically from day to day, from hour to hour. And so I think there is like a recency bias where people, we had a case with a client recently where they said, oh man, you know, we're just not getting as many chats and leads as we had before. And we thought, it seems weird because they're getting a ton. And so we went back and we looked a year before. And so we looked at the numbers we had from a year before, and they were getting like three times as many leads today as they were at the same time period last year. And so there is that recency bias that like, oh, we had a really great month last month, and then this month, oh, it wasn't so good. And so you think, oh, things are not working. But things might very well be working. You have to kind of take the long view on a lot of this stuff. Especially with the organic, as Chip was mentioning, I think less than 5% of the top 10 results in Google are a year old. So on the first page of Google, less than 5% of page one results in Google are less than a year old. So it takes 1 to 3 years for something to rank on page one of Google when it's really good. Mm-hmm. So something to think about when you're looking at your analytics.
Yeah, I feel like the recency bias is why we all sort of, in the dead of summer, we're all ready for a client call. Like, what's going on with my marketing? You know, I'm not getting anything. And it's like, well, no, not in, you know, July 4th week.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I would also say too, that you have to be looking at the right data. People will look at their website traffic and go, oh, my traffic's down. But then they forget to look at how many form fills they got that week. And if your website traffic's down, but your form fills are up, that's actually really good news, because it means that you're getting more qualified traffic to your site and it's performing better.
And that's actually a really, really good point, too, that we see all the time, is that we need to make sure that we are looking at the right data points, because our feelings about how something seems to be working or not working, you know, do we think it's working, do we not think it's working, I almost guarantee they're wrong. Mm-hmm. We see that ourselves, you know, we're doing something and we think, I feel like this should be getting more traction. You know, what's going on? Why aren't we getting more leads in this area? We go in and we look and we find out that we are. It is seems like it's rarely correlative to whether we actually are or not, how we feel. You know, like, it's just always wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to
right.
look at that data.
You have to look at the data.
And we find that's the case with our clients, too. They, you know, like Dave was saying, hey, things have really slowed down. They've done the opposite, you know. But we feel a certain way because of other influences in our life, things that are going on. And we think, hey, we need to fix this problem. And then come to find out there is no problem. So you need to make sure, is there actually a problem? And we make sure of that by looking at the right data points and seeing where things are at there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and keeping in perspective with a long view. What we try and do usually is if we give a client a piece of data that's a short view, you also include the long view so that you can see, okay, this might be down 5% from last month, but in the long view, you're actually up 500% over the long term.
So that's kind of getting, I feel like giving people a good, you know, base on which to assess, you know, how they're doing and whether they really have an issue and what the issue is. I also want to go through and just, you know, talk about some of the different components of a digital marketing campaign and what you'd specifically look for. I figured, Dave, we'd start with you because I want to talk about content first. We emphasize, you know, the importance of quality content, and it's kind of the core that you build everything around. So in terms of looking at your content and, you know, seeing whether there's an issue and where you can improve, what are you normally looking for when you look at a client's site?
If we're operating on the assumption that everything is sort of like on the up and up, that they have a content strategist in place, mm-hmm. they're posting regularly, but things aren't just performing well or aren't performing as well as they hope, I might take a look at the sort of like the themes of their content. And so are they posting about themselves every week? It's great to post a blog every week, but if the only thing you post about is what your firm accomplished or what award you won, or no one cares.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And we know that, you know, firms love those posts and they have their importance, but they do terribly in terms of organic search.
They're great for like social media, and celebrate on social media. That's awesome. But to try and write long form content about your accomplishments, people just aren't going to sit down for that. And
even if it's not long form, just the fact that, you know, if you're writing even like, if you think that you're keeping up your blog because you write a short update on your firm or, you know, something about your award you've won every few weeks, that isn't going to keep count for, you know, having a consistent and, you know, relevant blog to your readership.
Right. Definitely. Another themes that we might kind of look out for or try and avoid, you might want to avoid the really timely stuff. That does tend to get really good traffic right away, but then it really dies down like a week or two later. So if you mm-hmm. pick a hot news topic to write about, which I see that a lot when I'm doing blog research, you'll see firms that, you know, every day they post about something that's in the news that day. And then that traffic just goes away right away.
Yeah.
So you might get 400 hits on the day one because people are looking for that particular topic.
And how many of those people are looking for legal help, or they're just Googling the news and they may, you know, your site comes across at some point. But also too, unless you have a really prominent site, I mean, there's going to be a lot of, you know, a flurry of activity, and it's going to be really hard to stand out among that activity, you know? Mm-hmm. So, definitely. You know, if you can do a longer form piece a little bit later where you really kind of dig into the legal issues, but if you're just doing kind of a hot take type post, it's going to be so hard to get traction with something like that.
You're competing against all of the journalists and news entities that are out there.
Right.
And that is exactly what their job is. Mm-hmm. They should be better at it than a law firm who's posting blogs. So, you know, it's okay if something like that is part of a bigger strategy that includes the longer term, posts and content. But if you're trying to take away from the longer term to just do the shorter term because you think that that's what people want, you're going to end up with some short-term gains that are going to go away, and you're going to lose out on some of this traffic that may actually rank really well in a year or 2 years or things like that. So, you know, if you're starting out with a couple of posts or you're posting once a week, then focus on those longer term pieces. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk too about, I think that one thing that's, you know, every attorney in law firm should look at is the question of, do they have visual content on their site? You know, I think that, you know, we've talked a little bit before about how legal marketing tends to lag behind a little bit in terms of, you know, capitalizing on trends, and, you know, the importance of having video content and high quality images and compelling visuals, I think, is huge when you're trying to get your content, you know, to get traction and to keep people from leaving right away. I see a lot of sites that, too many law firm sites are just still on just the wall of text model, you know, and visitors just aren't going to respond to that at this point in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, even just a small image to go along with your blog post is going to go a long way towards helping you out, not just from a user experience perspective where someone says, oh, that's nice, and it kind of attracts their attention, but also from like a search engine optimization mm-hmm. perspective, an SEO perspective. Google likes to know that you have different types of content, because if you have different types of content, it tends to indicate that you have the budget and the funds to produce that type of content. So if you've got images and you've got text and you've got video and you've got some of these other assets on your website, Google goes, oh, well, those people have a lot of resources. They're probably a strong brand who could provide good services, and we'll kind of bump them up a little bit.
And if you want to see like a real world example of that, Google any type of food recipe. If you Google, you know, if you do a search for a recipe or cooking instructions or whatever, what you're going to end up finding is there's a full length article that talks about why they like to cook this way and how great their cast iron pan is, and all of these details. Then at the bottom, you have this recipe and the instructions, right? And so the people who are looking for this recipe are actually just looking for the recipe. The recipe that shows up in search results shows up because Google sees that it has this fleshed out content. Mm-hmm. And that content includes images and includes instructional pictures and some bulleted points and things like that. Those are the ones that show up in search. So even if, you know, there's a little bit of a balance there, like your users might want to see something one way. Google might see it slightly different. Usually those align pretty well, but you have to be aware of kind of both of those elements, right? And the recipes that are just the recipe with the instructions, maybe that's what you would want to find. Those don't show up in search. You know, the longer form discussion about the recipe, pictures and things like that, those do.
There's a site that I follow for my, you know, kind of culinary needs, and it's called Serious Eats. And they do such a good job of this. And if you ever want to just check out what great blog content looks like, and if they do a recipe and you Google that recipe, they will rank like in the first page. I guarantee it. And every post they do has, you know, not only the recipe, pictures of the recipe itself, the finished product of them making it along the way, but it also has like a long explanation of, you know, the story of how the person came to the recipe, you know, the science that goes behind it in terms of the culinary physical aspects of it. And it's, you know, it's long form content, but the result is still just, for most people, probably a recipe, but they're going to get there if you search for that stuff.
That's awesome.
It's really impressive, the work that they do. And so, like, you know, it's, even though it's a different field, just check that out. That's such a good example of, you know, how you can, you know, even if you're getting someone who just wants to get to the end and just, you know, read the most basic info, you're still going to rank well with that long form, in-depth, well-researched content.
Yeah. Well, and lawyers can apply that pretty directly, thinking about changing whatever your topic is into more of a how-to. You know, think of a way that you can change your idea into, you know, a recipe or a how-to for that particular topic. And then you can do that same thing. You know, you have a big numbered list, makes it easy to peruse. You've got some pictures along the way of the different steps.
Yep.
You've got content that develops and fleshes them out.
What they do too on that site is really well done is the initial big long form thing that explains the recipe and the journey the author came to making all that. It's like hidden. It has like a read more, button. And so you just get a snippet of that and then the recipe, and you can click the read more thing and it opens up the whole long blog article.
Nice.
That's really well done, I think.
Great user,
yeah.
User
so
experience.
The how to could be a similar thing where, you know, up top you explain kind of the legal details of it and the history of the law and whatever you want. And then, you know, the bottom you have the bullet points that people want. It could work really similarly and work well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I feel like we've kind of covered the content aspect of things. We could stay on it, I'm sure, for a long time. But in the interest of, you know, just having that multi-point inspection, we're going to keep going. So let's talk about the paid advertising side of things. Chip, I'll turn it over to you for this. So Chip, what are you usually looking for to assess the health of paid advertising campaigns and to see where firms can improve in that area?
So it depends on the type of paid advertising campaign, of course. On a pay-per-click campaign, you know, we really want to see those conversions and the click-through rate. So, you know, it's a funnel from reading the ad, doing the search, reading the ad, clicking on the ad, landing on the landing page, and doing this thing that we want them to do, which is filling out a form or making a phone call. So that's a pretty straightforward equation. If you're not getting conversions, you need to look at each part of that funnel and make sure that each piece fits with the previous piece. So you need to make sure that your ad groups align with your landing page copy, which aligns with your keyword list. You know, so you just need to kind of go from end to end and make sure those things all fit together. It gets a little bit more challenging on the display side, especially if you're trying to do some branding or if you're trying to promote some of your content through paid mechanisms. There what we want to look at is, you know, we still want to see that click-through rate, which is going to indicate what our ad copy or creative, you know, the value of that, if that's where it needs to be. But then once they get onto the site and they click through that, then we want to take a look at the bounce rate, time on site, and number of pages on the site. And still, we want to have that kind of one-to-one relationship between here's the ad, they got what they expected from the ad, and then they stuck around on the site.
Makes sense. And, you know, I feel like, too, that just, you know, this is sort of, I guess, a little bit of a plug for working in a marketing agency, but I feel like the paid advertising side of things is the side that requires the most fiddling and tweaking and constant adjusting. And, you know, if you are able to cover everything else like your content marketing on your own and your social media, but you need to work with an agency for your paid advertising, there's no shame in that. And we do that for clients all the time. You know, they only need that from us and that's perfectly fine with us. It makes a lot of sense for most firms, I think, because it's just so, you know, every day, something you have to keep up with every day, basically, you know, and keep adjusting.
Plus there are tools that just are not accessible to a firm that is only managing their own spend. And without those tools provide a competitive advantage and there's just no way around that. So even if you had somebody in-house who that's all they did all day, every day, it probably isn't enough to justify the spend on the software and the platforms that you use to help that campaign perform better.
I think too, sometimes we see just like a not even best practices being used, you know, like with remarketing, for example, where they'll just take people back to the homepage. Mm-hmm. And that's great. You know, that has been like, that's like a trend that people do that a lot, but it doesn't make a lot of sense from a user perspective. They've already been to your site. So if they're going to see a remarketing ad, you want them to go somewhere they haven't been on your site. You want to give them something they haven't gotten already. And so what you want to do is think about, can you provide something new and exciting to them that would entice them to come back for another reason besides just visiting your homepage again? And so that was one of the things too that I had thought of when you were passing around that stuff.
Yeah, I think that definitely makes sense.
And we're taking a look at how things can go wrong here, right? And so identifying those issues. You know, paid advertising is a huge, huge, terrible opportunity for things to go wrong.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Because if you don't have the funnel set up right, and if you haven't thought through each stage of the funnel, then you're going to be spending money and you're not going to get conversions. Like Dave said, if you're sending people the wrong page on an ad campaign, you're not going to get what you're looking for from that. And I feel like on the display side, which would include remarketing, is probably one of the biggest potential completely waste, you know, one of the biggest potential huge wastes of money that you can do on the digital side. So I think display is great, and there are a lot of great ways to use it. But one example of a way that can go south really fast is you just set up a display campaign and kind of use some of the defaults in the account. And then the next thing you know, you're running your ads on GemRush 2017, you know, which is a app and a game on somebody's phone, and somebody's toddler is just slamming away on those display ads. And so
it reminds me of that the ad where the baby's like ordering encyclopedias and the guy's like, we're back, you know.
Oh yeah,
that's a good one.
And it happens.
It really does. It's based in reality.
Yeah. And so we've got two kids, but one of them's old enough to want to play on the phone, and he clicks on an ad because it pops up and it looks fun. Mm-hmm. If he's got the phone, you know, we watch what he does, but he's going to click on those ads all of the time. And if you want to see your total volume of traffic go through the roof, you set that up because you can get cheap traffic that way. You can get a ton of it, but it is 100% not relevant. Not 100%, 99%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's bad traffic.
It is bad traffic.
And it'll make you feel great. You know, that's the thing too. You know, we've seen this too, where people will work with other marketing agencies or something, and they've got really good results, and then they disappear, right? When they stop working with this agency. And a lot of that's because, you know, there's a right way to do things and there's a less right way to do things. And that's one of them. There's a lot of ways to manipulate the system to make your numbers look good. And so, you know, we try and always stay really transparent about what we're doing and what we're reporting on as well, so that we can show, okay, yeah, like we're not ashamed to admit that your traffic is down 5% this month over the last month, because long-term growth looks really good.
I think you have to be able to have that honest communication with your agency. If you're working with an agency and they come back and it's all good news all the time, then something's not right about that.
Yeah.
Because part of this is exploring new territory. And when you explore new territory, some things are not going to work. You know, if you have such a small budget that you need to rely on very specific things, but even those things change, right? So you shouldn't get a report that's coming up all roses 100% of the time. You should be able to identify areas where there's issues. The agency should be willing to bring those to your attention instead of the other way around. You know, these aren't the things to sweep under the rug. These are things to talk about so we can improve. And that's how your campaign is going to get better. Because every meaningful campaign is going to go through some bumps. You know, if you're talking about a search campaign, the bid price on those search terms can change. And it can take a good campaign and make it not good. Or it can take a sloppy campaign and make it run okay because the cost per click is so low. But other people are going to get wind of your bid strategy and things like that. There's tools that help us do that. And then that dynamic's going to change. And so that's not the fault of the firm that's working on it or the person that's working on it. It's just the fact that things change that are outside of our control. So you have to be able to have that open, direct communication. You have to be able to rely on whoever is managing this stuff to come to the table and say, this thing did not work. Or this thing used to work, it doesn't work anymore. Now we need to make a change.
Got it. Okay, I feel like, you know, PPC can take up a lot of time. We could probably do a whole episode on troubleshooting PPC, right? In fact, we kind of did that with Kyle and Somia, and we could probably do another one easily. Let's move on. I'm sure we'll revisit PPC and the other, you know, phases of things too that we're going to talk about. Let's talk about social. This is a common issue for law firms, right? Can't get traction on social. We're posting. We feel like we're active. You know, can't get likes. What do you guys normally look for in social, and what do you want to see, and how do you think you can address that?
I think we'd look for some of the same data points with a few variations. So we want to see engagement in this case. We want to see people who are responding to the things that we're posting. Here again, you know, you have an ever-changing platform, an ever-changing field. You know, Facebook has an algorithm that they update and they modify. And so, you know, it used to be that you could post about your own content, and that's kind of the only thing that you post about, and you might do okay. Now Facebook has been starting to frown upon posting kind of the same content again and again, and similar content again and again. So we want to see some engagement in terms of the post itself, likes and shares, if we can get those things. And those can be hard to get on a non-paid post. And then if we're driving the traffic back to the website, we want to look at some of the same things there too, which is bounce rate, time on site, number of pages. So there again, we have this funnel. We want to align the content on social with the content on the site so that people, when they want to find something, they see it, they interface with it, and then they get what they're looking for.
Social is especially tricky because I think we've all experienced this too, but the data shows that likes and shares have essentially no correlation to engagement, actually, right, of the actual content. You know, they might engage with your post, but they might not actually ever visit your site. And so that's why it's really important, as Chip mentioned, to track the whole journey, you know, because you might get a post that goes gangbusters, but maybe it's just because the picture's funny. And so it gets a ton of likes and shares, but no one ever visits your site because of it. And so you have to sort of watch that whole journey with social and keep that in mind, because the data tells us that people like and share things a lot without ever actually engaging with them.
Yeah, there's a fact we talked about in one of our previous episodes that I can't remember the percentage of people, but like so many people like and share articles and they only read the headline, you know, right. They never actually read the content. So that is an issue. Then again, you know, it's better to get some traction, I suppose, than none, right? Yeah. So it's hard to strike that balance sometimes. I guess the only thing I would add is that, you know, one thing that we see on social is that, you know, people really love the slice of life kind of aspect of social. And I think that's an important component for any law firm. You know, it allows you to add the element to your brand that you really don't have on your website. And if you're able to do that consistently, I think it will build you a following, you know, more so than any other way. Most people are not going to want to read, you know, on a daily or weekly basis, you know, some law related, you know, it's mostly people who are have an immediate issue. And of course you want to target those people too, but you're not going to really keep a following that way. Right. But if you're able to, you know, show to your current and former clients, you know, what's going on in your office and just kind of give your firm a more human face. I think that's a way to, you know, really get that consistent engagement that firms are looking for.
This just happened with NPR. One of their posts went viral because one of their content curators accidentally posted a blog post of his own personal, like about him and his toddler, like on the NPR like show's professional blog.
Yeah.
And the post took off. It went gangbusters, right? And it's because, yeah, you saw that like little slice of humanity in something that's very professional all the time. And so social gives you a great opportunity for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know, when I post at home, on my own personal account, I mostly post like political stuff I read and news and analyses and like I get like a little bit of traction, but like I have people in my feed that just post what they have for dinner and they get so many, you know, it's crazy right. People's appetite for this stuff. So you just have to, you know, keep that in mind that, you know, that really appeals to people. Also too, one quote I came across while I was doing some research for this that I really liked is that a good thing to keep in mind, they said social media is like a cocktail party. You never want to be the person who's just talking about themselves, right? So it's important to engage, you know, with the news, with other firms and things, your peers. So even though it's important to have that aspect of your social where you're kind of giving people a window into, you know, your life and your practice, it's important that it not be all about you, right? It needs to be a conversation too, and it needs to be organic and natural.
That's a recurring problem that we run into again and again and again, where somebody somewhere down the line, you know, told the firm or the company or whoever's directing this, you know, area who we interface with, they told them that, you know, every post needs to reference the company or every post needs to point to someone that we work with or something like that. And it's just not the case. And so it feels good from the organization's perspective to look and say, well, we want to see like an ROI on everything that we're posting and everything that we're putting out. Well, and that's what our goal is, But getting that ROI is not necessarily a direct correlation between talking about the company, right? Sometimes we have to build an audience and we have to connect with people and we have to do some of the things like the personal elements, a slice of life. You know, you can't measure a direct ROI from that, but you'll build awareness of who you are so that when you do have this specific message, you'll have a much more receptive audience and you'll have an audience to begin with. So we run across this a lot. You know, you just want a fraction of your posts to be self-promotional because otherwise people will unfollow you. They'll just stop and they won't be there for you when you do have, you know, that specific thing that you're trying to promote.
Definitely.
All right. That's all we have time for in this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. But don't forget that we're just getting started with this discussion and we're going to be back in 2 weeks with part two of how to troubleshoot your digital marketing campaigns. As always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.